Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Tom Butler.
And I'm Brendan Duffy.
You're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us on this journey of discovery across the world of the 007 movies as we take an encyclopedic look at cinema's greatest spy films.
We'll learn about the people who made them in front of the camera and behind, from Ken Adam to Mac Zorin, with the occasional detour down a few rabbit holes. And we'll sometimes be joined by guests with unique insight into the world of Bond.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the James Bond brand, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we do get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us on podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast, where F is for festive special. My name is Tom Butler, and joining me to roast his chestnuts over an open fire, it's Mr. Brendan Duffy.
Ooh, lovely. Hello.
And returning to the show for this festive favourite, he's always wanted to have Christmas in Turkey, it's Mr. Tom Wheatley.
Hello, guys.
Welcome back.
Wow, that's thank you positive.
Very much. Yeah, well, it's not going to stay positive for very long, but I might start on a high.
All-time high. Very good. And our last Christmas special was a No Time to Die spoiler special, but with no new James Bond movie to talk about, we're going to take a look at Daniel Craig's new movie, Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. We're also going to be taking a look at your correspondence and, of course, talking about James Bond. But first, how has 2022 been for you two guys?
It's been better than 2021, I think. I relocated, had a career change. It's been eventful, to say the least, but good. Overall, yeah.
Nice. I've also relocated and had a career... Well, not career change. I've got a job change.
You got fired.
I got fired again. And I'm doing a lot of running. More running than normal.
Yes, because you do your own running podcast/YouTube channel, don't you?
I do indeed, yes. Yeah. No, zero Bond mentions in it as well.
What a shame. What a shame.
The crossover doesn't quite work. There's not many good running... I suppose Craig's running's okay, but Roger refused to, didn't he?
Yeah, he said his gym teacher told him never to run because he looked funny when he did it.
Yeah.
But obviously 2022 in the world of Bond, that was the 60th anniversary of the film series. What did you make of the celebrations over the last 12 months?
Well, I've been, you've been celebrating quite a bit, haven't you?
I have. I mean, did you indulge in the Sound of 007 documentary, for example?
I watched the Sound of 007 on a flight to LA. And very much enjoyed it, actually. Yeah, it was good.
And of course, the screenings throughout the year at the cinema.
Of course,
I think I managed to see just over half. But yeah, watched all the documentaries and the live performance, but obviously it was edited. A lot of the stuff I wanted to see. And of course, you saw it in person, didn't you, Tom?
I did, yeah. I went to the Albert Hall, saw the Sound of 007 in concert. It was great. It was really good fun. It was quite an emotional evening, actually. Seeing Shirley Bassey singing out her hits. And of course, I think the highlight was David Arnold doing You Know My Name. in tribute to Chris Cornell, which was quite a touching tribute. I've never heard David Arnold sing, but I thought he was amazing.
Might whack that one on Christmas Day with the family.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I mean, apart from the Sound of 007 documentary, there's not been a huge amount to talk about, and the re-releases, has there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the Sound of 007 sort of took the biggest bit of marketing I've seen for the whole thing. But it's surprisingly small, the amount of stuff. There's not many sort of experiential things happening either.
No, they had the auction, didn't they, which none of us could afford to buy anything in, which was part of the celebrations. But yeah, I think a lot of people probably were hoping for, you know, the video game to come out, a 4K box set to be announced.
Mm. Some form of exhibition, you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess in certain places they had the Bond in Motion exhibition, but not for us in the UK. And they did do an exhibition for the auction. It was kind of muted. No Bond announcements to talk of, really.
No.
Apart from the Amazon series, was that this year that was announced? Probably.
Yeah, but it's not doesn't feel like a real big Bond announcement, does it?
No. Okay, well, let's dive into it first. We did put a call out to our listeners for various things, one of them being James Bond Christmas cracker jokes. Are you ready for these?
I'm not, actually. I don't think I'll ever be ready for them. I'm probably going to be less ready for them when I've listened to them. So,
Wheatley, you need to hold your sides because they might split.
Yeah. Right, pull that cracker. You've got a hat, a little whistle, and a little joke for you. What is James Bond's festive code name?
God. I don't know.
Ho Ho 7.
Okay.
I think Double Ho 7 might have worked better. That was from Darren Leafley.
Why has he got a festive code name? I'm sure that's confusing.
Well, it's a Christmas cracker.
back to MI6. It's like, remember, it's December. So it's Ho Ho 7.
Please use your festive
Ho Ho 7, who?
Double Ho 7. And then Jack McMorrow. I'm going to change it slightly just to, I think the punchline's better if he says, what do you call James Bond in the bath?
Brenda's laughing, so are you laughing at the premise, or do you know the answer?
No, I've worked the answer out.
I don't know.
Go on, what is it?
Bubble 07.
Bubble 07, yeah.
Bubble 07. It's quite good.
Come to my chalet, I give you Christmas surprises.
Fine bird and a good stuffing, perfect. You certainly know how to satisfy a man.
Well, let's dive into it then. So, I mean, this is totally off the beaten track for a James Bond podcast, but I thought we'd talk about Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, which at the time of listening to this will be available to watch on Netflix. Of course, it's the sequel to Knives Out, the 2019 Rian Johnson film. And we all went to see it at the cinema, I believe.
Yeah, should we just do a light spoiler alert now?
Well, or should we save spoilers for a little... No, let's just put a spoiler on,
but I can't think of anything that would...
But I want to talk about a cameo.
Okay.
And they're quite fun, aren't they?
I get you. Yeah.
Okay. So, both of you... we all saw it at the cinema. Was the cinema busy? Because it was only in cinemas for a week, wasn't it?
It wasn't when I went. It was quarter full at most.
Yeah, mine was full. I went on a Monday at Showcase. So they do their Showcase.
Monday night
full, yeah. Oh, they had to put another screen on, that's it. Yeah, we missed the 7:30 and they put a 7:40 on because the first one was full.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
The screen I went to was, it was really full. It was, it wasn't like totally full, but like it was one of the busiest screens, cinema showings I've been to recently. And it seemed to go down really well. There's obviously an appetite to see that film on the big screen. So it is a shame that they didn't put it on properly in cinemas. But it was probably the first Netflix film I've seen at a Cineworld. I've seen Netflix films at a local, like, picture house type at the Broadway in Letchworth, but not at a Cineworld. So that's kind of a big deal, isn't it?
I always think it's interesting when there's these films that are made for Netflix, or they're made to be on Netflix, that people go and see them like in droves. It's quite impressive. Like if you're going to put that much effort into going to see a film, you wouldn't expect it was going to be out in, you know, 3-4 weeks time. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a pretty good sign that it's a good way to go for Craig and the team.
I also think it's a good sign for Netflix to go down, right? If they want to recuperate any loss they may have taken.
Yeah, I mean, it would suggest that they're doing the right thing if that happens. I mean, I think it'd be a pretty risky move to do it with most of the stuff that Netflix released.
Yeah,
but
no, they need to be selective, yeah.
They need to be very selective, but it does show that they are putting effort into some of the stuff that's being produced, and it's got an audience that will happily pay for it and watch it when it comes on Netflix.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder whether the cinema release was part of their deal they did with Netflix, because basically the story is they made Knives Out, the first one, I think with Lionsgate in 2019. It was a massive hit for them. And then Rian Johnson, producer Ram Bergman and Daniel Craig then took the idea out that they could make sequels. And Netflix was the highest bidder. Netflix paid a reported $450 million for two sequels.
Wow, incredible.
But the fact that it's in cinemas, I think, must have been some sort of contractual obligation as part of that deal. I think Rian Johnson was probably keen for this to be seen on the big screen. And it would have been probably a part of the deal. And also to get a proper cinema release as well, not just not just in the smaller release ones. But because of that deal, we don't know how much it took at the cinema when it was in there for a week. And I guess Netflix are thinking that they will be able to recoup it with subscribers, perhaps. Mm. But I think the problem is, I think with Netflix and with Wall Street, they see themselves as a brand new sort of streaming platform. And if they move into theatrical distribution, it's sort of saying, we're not different to anyone else.
Yes.
It's not unique. So it sort of almost goes against everything that Netflix stands for by going into cinemas. Mm-hmm. I think that's the reason for it.
So did adverts, and they've gone down that route. So,
well, yeah. Exactly. I mean, anything can happen at Netflix now, couldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Enter Benoit Blanc.
Do you know what? It's really good to see Daniel Craig having fun in a role. And you could really sense that in this.
Yes.
Something we've not always seen from the Bond films, I would say.
Yeah, he's definitely grasped it, hasn't he? And you can see him actually trying to really create the character, which is nice to see. And there's certain scenes and films with Bond where he's sort of going through the motions, but yeah, I think he's an interesting character, and he's definitely one that you look at Daniel Craig's like past roles, and he's done a lot that are sort of quite samey, but he has done some that are quite varied, and I think Benoit Blanc's probably a good example of him going, right, I'm really going to go all in on this one and try and really make this character interesting.
Yeah, you wonder how much of it a part of it is a conscious thing to sort of distance himself from what we think of him as James Bond. I think it's definitely part of a wider strategy for him. Because did you see Logan Lucky as well?
Yes, that's the one I was thinking about when I was his sort of moving around different characters that he was trying.
Yeah, he played sort of like a redneck, didn't he? Criminal, and he had a very broad accent in that as well, didn't he? And a funny haircut and.
Yeah, and then
yeah,
of course
definitely going against time.
There's the advert that he did recently as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Put your loving
on me. Finally.
And cut.
Someone I saw said it had big divorced dad energy.
Yeah, that's pretty pretty right. Yeah.
Which I think this film has a little bit of as well, and I think I do enjoy seeing him playing Benoit Blanc, and I thought that first scene of him in the bath. Was quite funny. Mm. Just that idea of this detective being cooped up because of lockdown or whatever and sort of being forced to play some rubbish game with Angela Lansbury on.
The lockdown thing is strange for me in that film. It's like they start off with it and then they just leave it. But it doesn't need any of that. It sort of dates it a bit for me. And especially I got a bit confused by that a bit in the bath because I liked it, but he was on the... I was trying to work out why they were on it. I assumed it was a sort of Netflix link up. Like I know one of what was the name of the lady who was in Russian Doll? She's a Netflix star, isn't she? But I was assuming,
Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah, I was assuming that it was like a Netflix sell, like they do.
Yeah.
And I only knew three of the people, so I had to work out who the other person was and why it was associated with it. But it didn't seem to me... I could see why you'd do that in a film. You were referencing people that have starred in, you know, similar murder mystery type things. But it wasn't clear enough for me. It just didn't... I didn't quite seem why, understand why he was doing it.
Yeah, I think it's a comment on him being this famous detective, right? It's not just that he's renowned for being a detective. He's world renowned. Everyone knows who he is.
Yeah.
Which kind of works in that world, doesn't it? The other person is Stephen Sondheim, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's Stephen Sondheim, Angela Lansbury, and Natasha Lyonne, mm-hmm. and they're playing Among Us, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
Which I think is a funny sort of thing. But I mean, you mentioned the coronavirus lockdown thing. That was something I was going to bring up later, actually, because for me, it was unnecessary and it didn't add anything to it, unless I'm missing something.
I can understand if it came out in the depths of it, but it's too risky a move to put it in and for a film that's being released later when COVID isn't going to be a major thing. So sort of, it actually made me think this is quite an old film when I first started watching it.
Mm-hmm. I felt the same as well. I think moving forward, we're going to want to see as little of that period of time as possible, right? We all lived it and it was horrible. So
yeah, unless you completely lean into it. You might be able to do a film where you lean fully into COVID mm-hmm. and people go, I remember that. I remember that happening. But just to reference it, it's like, well, this is a murder mystery on some island. You don't need to do that.
But the thing is, they could have used it, because the whole mask thing, that could have been part of the mystery.
Yeah.
And again, they didn't lean into that. So it's very strange.
I can't work out what that discussion would have been like in the writing room where they went, oh, here's an idea. And everyone went, yeah, let's definitely stick that in.
Yeah. Was it you that said, do you think there may be some scenes that fell on the cutting room floor for that would have made it tighter a bit more?
Yeah, I wonder if there was like a subplot that sort of played into it a little bit more. Mm. I mean, there were some funny moments within it, you know, like the Kate Hudson character being like this party animal who does what she wants. And the fact that she was having huge parties in the middle of lockdown sort of helped to explain who she was. And then the fact that she had that sort of fishnet mask on was quite funny as well when she arrived at the boat. Mm-hmm. And then also the divide between the mask, who was wearing a mask and who wasn't on the pier. Because it's just, I think it's like Dave Bautista's character and his girlfriend turn up and they're not wearing it, but they're sort of, that's part of their character.
I think that would have worked. During lockdown, people would have really noticed that and they've gone, what are they doing? Mm. But I didn't even spot that. It was almost like, I don't care, just move on with the storyline, because clearly it's not like a focus.
Yeah, but Brendan, you wanted to speak about a cameo, and that sort of happens quite early on in the film. Is that the one you're thinking of, or are you thinking of a different one?
Which one are you thinking of?
Well, Ethan Hawke is the guy on the pier, isn't it?
Yeah, but I missed that, so I'm not thinking of that. Surprisingly, I missed that one. Mine I enjoyed was Hugh Grant, because that really did pop out of nowhere.
Oh, that was interesting. Yeah, that was good.
It's like, of all the people, if you do a list of like 100 people, I would never have guessed Hugh Grant was going to answer that door.
No. And Benoit Blanc's lover, isn't he? Apparently, according to what Rian Johnson and Daniel Craig have said about the film. Which, I mean, does that add anything to it? I guess not.
I think it's a nice little... I enjoyed it when I saw it. I was like, oh, that's quite funny. But it's almost, in the first film, there wasn't any of that, really. They're building up the characters and everything. This one, they've thrown a few things in, which are a little bit jarring for me. It's not necessary, where it's just, you know, Hugh Grant pops up, Angela Lansbury pops up, where you go, ooh, cameo, nice, good, Marvel cameo. which I don't think you need. I think it cheapens it a little. I don't think the murder mystery world needs those things.
It's almost, you're right. It's almost like an Avengers style cameo. Because I mean, both of the films have been incredibly star laden, haven't they, in terms of the cast?
Yeah, and that might be why you don't like the cameos, because it's already
an
ensemble.
It sort of almost diminishes the stars that they've got in it by saying, "Hey, we've got even more famous stars, and they're just going to pop up and do a quick thing."
You could have Hugh Grant could have been a character in that. Angela Lansbury could have turned up and been a character in that. Mm. But just to throw them in, it's like, we've got enough now. Don't need any more.
You must have enjoyed the Jeremy Renner nod, though.
What was the Jeremy Renner
on
nod?
On the sauce.
The hot sauce.
Yes.
That was nice. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Well, that's like in the writing, isn't it? You've got to find that pitch perfect person. Mm-hmm. who the hot sauce could be by. Yeah. And Jeremy Renner is the level of actor slash Hollywood star who could have his own hot sauce.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is really good writing, I think. And talking about the writing, I guess the thing I love about Rian Johnson's stuff and like all of his movies is how they sort of subvert your expectations, right? In that he tells you what the genre is going to be, but then it's kind of not how you expect it's going to be. And in the first one, I thought it was really smartly done. By the way, what did you both think of the first one?
Loved the first one. Thought it was absolutely spot on. Surprisingly good. Like one of those films where you go in and go, okay, I'll watch this. I think it's going to be all right. And you come out and you go, actually, that was fantastic. That was really good.
I love those sort of films that come out of nowhere and just really impress you.
Yeah. And even things like when you, at the time, Daniel Craig was doing Bond and kind of thought, oh, he's going to be just playing Bond in this. He didn't. He played someone completely different. Yeah. Mm. And also it was an ensemble cast, but an ensemble cast where they really put a lot of effort into character development. And that's, you don't get that with a lot of ensemble casts. So it was surprisingly good. And that's obviously why they've made a second one with cost so much money.
Yeah. I mean, I loved the first one. I saw it at the cinema and then, I remember my mum was staying at ours and we were looking for something to watch. I think it was on Amazon or something. And I just thought, this is just like the perfect movie to put on with your mum because it works for all ages. Everyone understands the dynamic of a whodunit. Everyone can appreciate the sort of the different twists. And I guess the point I was getting at with the writing and how he subverts it was that in the first one, he tells you who's done it right at the start, pretty much. Yeah. You know the guy's died, but then you also know how he's done it, and then it becomes why done it, and then it all sort of turns on its head, doesn't it? Like everyone's trying to figure things out and unmask the real killer, and everyone's trying to protect different people. I thought that was really neatly done, but in this one, spoiler alert, I think it's really smart how you don't the murder mystery, you don't know the murder mystery is until about the halfway point. You don't even know who's died. Mm. It's set up to be a murder mystery weekend and you think they're there to solve it and you think Bron is going to die, Edward Norton's character is going to die, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
And then it turns out the person who's died before the film even started, which I think is really, really neat.
Yeah. And you kind of, I think if it was a old school style murder mystery, you replay the same format over and over again, but you can't do that with big films like this because people just go, oh, it's very similar to the first one. So you have to do that, but it comes with risks as well by doing that. And I think there are elements of it, which I sort of watched and thought, they've gone a different, they have tried to do something different here, but I think they've gone too far away from what it is that I liked about the first one.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think I was that shocked when the murderer is revealed. I think it's relatively obvious.
Yeah.
But that's part of it as well, isn't it? Because it's the glass onion, right? You can see through to the center of it right from the start. Yeah. But the joy is in the discovery of it, I guess.
It just reminded me of probably one of my favorite scenes is the fake murder mystery that he set up when Benoit Blanc solves it. It's just incredible scene.
That is
Daniel
good.
Craig.
That is
Daniel good, Craig yeah. has so much fun with that. I love that scene.
Yeah.
But if anyone can name the killer, tell me how they achieved the murder, and most importantly, what was the motive? That person wins our game. Any questions?
What do we win?
What do you want?
No, nothing. I just thought maybe there was a prize or something. An iPad or
Okay, fine. Yeah, no, the winner gets an iPad.
That is great, yeah. You've mentioned the ensemble there, but like, do you have any particular favourite characters or any characters you wanted to sort of highlight?
I think, what's her name? Goldie Hawn's daughter.
Yeah, Kate Hudson.
She's very good. I think she's really good. I actually quite like Ed Norton in it. I think he's Ed Norton's an interesting one because we've not seen him do a lot of stuff recently, and it's nice to see him doing something good where he's got an interesting character. But I think they're all good. I just don't think. I think for me, the characters in the first one just had a little bit more depth than they do in this one.
Yeah, I agree. But having said that, I also agree about the cast. I think it's a good cast. They all do a great job.
Yeah.
Batista, I really like Batista's character.
Yeah, Batista's a good job, isn't he? Yeah.
Again, everyone's having fun with it. And because obviously the way they shot it, because they shot it during COVID, they spend a lot more time with each other, right? The cast. And that comes across.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I never really considered that. They do spend more time just sort of in scenes together. I really love that scene where they're sat around the pool and do you know which one I mean? And Birdie's got the magazine cover and that sort of becomes a clue in itself, doesn't it? But yeah, seeing them all together, it is great. And I guess that's, it adds to almost like a more stagey feel to the film than perhaps the first one in terms of like the everyone being together at the same time. I really like Jessica Henwick's character, the assistant, Peg. I thought she was really like nicely done. I haven't seen her in a huge amount of stuff, but I thought she was really, really interesting. And I like the way that the film sort of does that classic whodunit thing where it sets every single character up as having a motive for wanting to kill Bron. But obviously we then realize that Bron's not the one who's been killed anyway. So that kind of gets all thrown out as well. My favourite of the ensemble, though, has to be that guy who just keeps popping up.
Yeah, that's an interesting writing method. It sort of pulls you out. You get dragged into the script and then he crops up and you're like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a classic red herring. You think he's going to be a big part, integral part of it, but no, he's
literally
just the guy on the
island. I don't think he
is.
I don't think at any point he's a red herring. I think from the first time I saw him, I was like, he is just a thing thrown in to make it a little, just add a little humour in every now and then. At no point did I think he was a red herring.
I have to say I did. I thought, do you know what? He's going to be some sort of mastermind. He's put all this together.
He just reminded me like that bloke in Deadpool, the guy who's in there, who's just a normal guy who joins the group of them.
Yeah.
Right. The Rob Delaney character.
Which is purely there just for a few jokes. He's got like 8 jokes in it, and that's it.
Last but not least,
Peter.
Am I getting catfished here? Or any powers you want to tell us about?
No, I don't have one. I just saw the ad.
No superpowers at all?
I have both type 1 and 2 diabetes.
Yeah, I think the person I thought like didn't get enough to do or wasn't in it enough or didn't have enough interesting part was the Catherine Hahn character. She was Claire, the political one who sort of has a link to it all. And she is sort of loosely connected with it, but I don't really feel you get a sense of who she is or why she's there or why you should care. I think perhaps she felt like one character too many.
She was a bit convoluted in that she had the like, relationship with the other guy. I don't remember much about that relationship, so it can't have been that impactful.
But she had one of the most. Yeah. She had the beginning of the film where they set each character up and introduce it. Like that was memorable, and yet that was her scene. Really, didn't really move on from that, did it?
And I don't know if you remember, but in the bit where when the murder happens, when Duke gets killed, they bump into each other when they're walking across the floor in the room that they're in. And I was like, oh, it's got something to do with her. But again, I think that's just a classic red herring, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, taking it back to Edward Norton, I think he's an interesting cast, a person to play that character because of his sort of personal reputation for being a bit of a tyrant himself. Mm. So I thought that casting was really nice. But I think for me, my favourite was Janelle Monáe, who plays the dual roles of Helen and
Absolutely
Andy.
Fantastic. Yes. Yeah.
What do you think of her, Wheatley?
Yeah, I thought she was good. I didn't. It wasn't that surprising when you found out. It wasn't because something like that needed to happen. That character clearly had something very obvious that was associated with it, and it wasn't part of the story, really. It was something completely separate. I sort of didn't like that. I don't like it when whodunits bring in a completely new thing to the... Because I think with whodunits, everything that happens has to have something that's already grounded in stuff you already know. But when you bring in a completely new plot device, you sort of go, well, you can do anything then. Like, you can suddenly say, you know, so-and-so's a different person. And it just sort of loses the impact for me. And I did, at that point, I did sort of drop off a bit and go, right, so they can do anything now. It's not as as cleverly interwoven as I thought.
Well, that's not Janelle Monáe's fault. You know, I think her performance is great.
No, her performance is good. Yeah,
she's playing a character that is playing a character within itself, which I think is always a great talent.
With their character, I was thinking by the end, is there going to be another twist? And it's going to be revealed that the sister was the one that was murdered, and now she's got all her money back because of this situation. Yeah. I thought that was what was happening, but that was never.
But as soon as that twist dropped, the case. With her being like dual people, then suddenly everything was quite simple after that point because it was very clear what was happening. But yeah, no, she was very good.
Yeah, I've always said that she would be a good person in a Bond film because she's this kind of person that could do the theme song and be in it as well. I think that she's got
Madonna.
That capability. Very much like Madonna, very much in the mold of Madonna. Yeah. I mean, you watch a lot more whodunits weekly, perhaps, and you know a bit more about Agatha Christie stories. Brendan, you went to see Mousetrap, didn't you?
Yeah, and of course, See How They Run came out this year as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is very much in the same sort of mold.
Well, I think the thing of whodunits are very carefully, they're like a puzzle. Right, the people who write it are writing a puzzle, basically. That every little thing they drop has to form part of this whole clever thing. Because at the end of a whodunit, you as the viewer has to go, remember that. But I think with this, there were so many sort of moving parts and so many new things happening that didn't happen for me. It wasn't like I went back and went, I remember that happening and that happening. Because none of it was relevant. Mm. Because it just sort of brought a new thing in. So what I think it's more like a whodunit for the Netflix generation because it sits outside of that. We'll talk about the ending in a bit, but there's elements of it which are really designed more like a action drama film as opposed to a whodunit. And whodunits are, you look at Murder in the Building and things, they're very subtle. Everything that happens has got to be subtle and you've got to it's got to give you enough information for the audience to pick up on it. But not necessarily giving them the answers. Whereas this, numerous occasions, gives you the answers very clearly. And then you're like, okay, right, so that's happening now. And then they sort of go down that route for a bit. Mm-hmm. But I reckon if you go through that film and look at some of I wouldn't even class them as red herrings, because they're just things that happen that don't have any impact on the rest of the story. And at no point do you go, he did that earlier on, because you know that they didn't. It's of no relevance to it because they've moved the story on so much more since that point.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What I've noticed is that as we're now getting a lot of stuff coming out that was shot during COVID, it's all got a same sort of feeling to it. So, for example, The Menu. Have either of you seen The Menu? So obviously,
yes.
That was similar. They all stayed on together and they shot together because of COVID restrictions. And also White Lotus, which of course is the same. They all shot together, stayed together. And it's bringing out films and TV shows that have got a very distinct feel to them. A big ensemble. You can tell that they're all close. And so for me, Glass Onion, it feels a bit like The Menu. It feels a bit like White Lotus.
Yeah.
Sort of all mixed into one.
Yeah, and you probably sort of lose the... Especially with something like a whodunit, where whodunit is very much... The writer has all the ideas. You don't change things when you're filming it. You don't like have discussions amongst the actors and things and go, oh, why don't we try this? No, you can't. It has to be the puzzle that I've set out. And if you change that, some of it won't work. And I think that's sort of happened with The Glass Onion, where they've worked together and gone, oh, I'll try doing it like this and try doing it like this. And some of the whodunit mystery has been lost in that, which they didn't have in the original one.
Just want to bring it back to something you said before, like something, what was it, the whodunit for a Netflix generation. And this is something we talked about when we were texting after we'd seen it, in that there is one, something I didn't enjoy with the movie, in that it has a sort of a Netflix sheen to it in some of the visual effects. Because the first one was obviously so grounded in reality, set on that country house. It felt very much a real place. Real people, everything felt tangible. Whereas in this one, because it had this sort of fantasy island mansion feel to it, like sometimes there were shots, especially a bit where the car's on the sit on the roof and it's spinning round, that you just get this sort of CGI sheen to it that almost, I think, takes you a little bit out of the movie.
It's exactly the same thing that's happening with Brenner and his Poirot films, where they're so glossy and there's so much money behind them that you sort of want, with a murder mystery, you want it to be very simple and honest, and you want to spot all the little things that are going on. When you put CGI in, you're like, well, I can't spot anything from this. It's CGI. There's like so much going on. It's the murder mysteries are all about the little things, leaving something on a table and something somebody does in a room. But if you start blowing it up out of proportion and, you know, there's explosions and things, it's like, oh, there's no point in me watching now. Like, I can't spot anything from this.
That's a really good point. Actually, that leads to my sort of number one gripe with the movie, which is the sort of the MacGuffin at the centre, which is that solid carbon, the fuel that he's going to use.
Yeah.
But that solid fuel at the centre of it is just something completely out of science fiction. And kind of, if you take that part out of the film, it sort of doesn't work. And therefore, because of that, it's you're adding a layer of fantasy to it, which I think, sort of distracts a little bit from the rest of the story.
I think you can have a grandiose MacGuffin at the start, like it's a nuclear scientist that's done this and this, and then you leave it. You don't. That's not important. It's the people that are important. If you're focusing on the technology around it, then suddenly you can do anything. Like anything can happen. But yeah, throwing that in at that point actually confuses it. She's like, well, hold on, what? This isn't a MacGuffin anymore. This is like changed how it all works, because, you know, and it ultimately does change how it all works, and it shouldn't do. That shouldn't be the what affects the outcome of a murder mystery. And it really does at the end.
I mean, let's talk about the ending then, because it's obviously got a sort of an explosive ending. And one of the other sort of key parts of it is that whole thing around the Mona Lisa. Does that work?
I was questioning in it when the Mona Lisa was brought up. It was too much. Like, it was like just having it there. You were like, is it real? Is that part of the plot?
COVID, isn't it? It's COVID. That might be one of the reasons why it's what COVID. He was able to loan it because the gallery's all shut.
Right. Okay. So I didn't quite grasp that. But even then, I was like, why have you got it? Like, why are you loaning this thing?
But in another, in any other murder mystery, you could just say this is a priceless, painting, right? And it could be any painting, and you wouldn't have to sort of say it's the Mona Lisa, the most famous painting in the world.
Yeah. Well, I think ultimately by doing that, anything like all of the security that had around it, the ending that had to it, was on that ridiculous, grandiose level of the fact that the Mona Lisa was the thing that was gonna. It was a massive gamble, basically, having that thing there. And it elevates, in a bad way, a murder mystery from being about the characterization and what's happening to you've got all these massive things going on. And it sort of takes away the attention from the personal aspects. You're like, well, what are they going to do with the Mona Lisa? Why is it there? All these sorts of things. You can see that happening in a film about, you know, Ocean's 11, where you have to have high stakes to make the point of the heist. But the point of this isn't the Mona Lisa. It has no effect on it, really. Like, it's the people. Why are they killing each other? So I think it's a strange. It changes the mood of it, and that's what I was saying with like the next generation murder mystery. Not necessarily the wrong way to go. Maybe this is a new sort of murder mystery that that people can, you know, people that aren't necessarily into that sort of genre can get into. But it's very jarring for somebody who's used to murder mysteries.
Yeah, it's almost as like they wrote themselves into a corner because Miles Bronn is untouchable and there's nothing else that would have really got him, right? This is the one thing. It has to be something on this scale, some sort of scandal. And
it ties back to the stuff that Miles Bronn says when he's at the pool when he's talking about breaking the one thing that no one should ever break or destroying the thing that no one wants to be destroyed. And that is sort of a cut. That's obviously I was thinking of that when it happens, when they do destroy it.
I'd go the other way with it. And if you're taking a lead character who is seemingly rich, powerful, beyond belief, that he's beaten by something simple, and that would be the nice twist, which is what happens in a lot of murder mysteries when we have rich people and stuff. They're normally beaten by the most simple thing. It sort of escalates throughout the film, doesn't it? Like you would expect in an action film where it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until eventually you've got this massive ending that sort of, and it never goes back to the little bits. It's always, it, done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but overall, did you enjoy it? Did you like the film?
Yeah, I think it was enjoyable. I enjoyed watching it. I didn't enjoy it as much as the first one. Just because I think it wasn't as grounded as the first one, but I do think it's a whodunit for the Netflix generation. And I think in terms of what Netflix makes, I think this is one of the best things they make. I think it's a good film and a good series for them to have.
Yeah, and a great film to be released at the cinema as well, even if it was only a week. I enjoyed seeing it on the big screen. I think that added to the enjoyment. And because they went big scale and there were explosions, that also added to it, seeing that on the big screen. I know you don't think it's got a place in a whodunit, but, you know.
I think that it'd be interesting to see. I mean, I'm coming at this from the point of view of an old school sort of whodunit fan.
Yeah.
But if it had have been an old school whodunit, it would never make anywhere near as much money as it's likely to. So it's probably, it'd be interesting to see what people say who may be younger people who, you know, this is the first one of those sorts of films they've seen. You know, it might open it up the world of whodunits for them. I'm not sure, but I think it's good. I think it's a good film. I just think it's a strange genre or a strange adaptation of a genre.
Yeah, I think it's a good film to release just before Christmas as well, because more people are going to be at home looking for something to watch. And if you've got a brand new ensemble Daniel Craig type film to watch at home, then it's a good alternative to going to see Avatar at home, or watching Home Alone again. It's a really good entertaining movie that you can put on Christmas. I know in America they've got the Matilda the musical on Netflix as well, and again that would be another perfect watch at home on Christmas Day sort of movie, but we don't get it. We got it in the cinema instead. So for that reason, I think I really enjoyed it. I thought they did a really solid job on it, but I just had a few major gripes in which case, like you said, compared to the first one, I don't think I enjoyed it quite as much, but I still really enjoyed it. Does it compare to the first one for you, Brendan?
It's not as good. I think they really set the bar quite high, to be honest, with the first one. Mm. But that said, really enjoyed it. I think it does a decent enough job. And all the cast, I think, are pretty good, pretty solid performances all round, which is, yeah. You know, in an ensemble, that's not always the case. If you look at the Kenneth Branagh Poirots that we've had, there's a lot of dead weight, you know.
The Kenneth Branagh films are a good one to compare this to, I think, because they're both an evolution of a concept that's been around for a very long time, and they both do it in very different ways. In fact, Kenneth Branagh just basically does the same thing, but blows it up into a spectacle that's unnecessary. At least this ties it into the storyline and what they're trying to do. So I think this is far superior to Kenneth Branagh's Agatha Christie films.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm hopeful for the third one. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm hoping they take it down a notch, because they can't really take it up a notch, can they? With the
that's true.
Spectacle.
I was going to ask what you were sort of would hope for from Knives Out 3. I know we've had two different locations, two different casts. And Brendan, we've both been watching White Lotus recently. Yeah. And I saw a funny post, someone saying that they're both Knives Out and White Lotus will be racing to do a ski lodge series next. And I can't get like a ski lodge setting out of my mind for Knives Out. But also, like I think someone said for White Lotus, a cruise on a cruise would also really work, I think, for the series. I think that could work for Knives Out as well. But what about you? What would you like to see from Knives Out 3?
I reckon they're bound to do a British one at some point.
Yeah,
tie it back to Britain, because that's sort of the home of the original murder mystery. And it would be interesting to see Benoit with a load of English people, maybe a couple of Americans as well. I think that's probably what they'll do to beef it up a bit and take it back to sort of traditional roots as well.
Take it to Edinburgh. I think it'd be really interesting to take
that would
it
be good,
there.
Yeah.
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 I can see Stephen Fry doing one if they brought it here.
I reckon that would be the best move they could do if they brought in a load of classic English actors and did like a full Mouse Hunt style thing.
Yeah.
Mousetrap. Mouse Hunt.
Timmy Dalton. They need to get Timmy Dalton in.
Well, imagine if they did a Bond reunion in that style. Yeah, that's the way they do it. It could
work.
It really could. Yeah.
And I get the sense that Rian Johnson is a fan as well. There's a couple of times in Glass Onion where I thought, I wonder if that's a Bond reference. It's definitely like when he comes to the island and the thing comes out of the water. But there's also a bit when they first come into his, you know, his main like hall where all the glass objects are. And Daniel Craig goes behind one of the objects and looks through it, very much like Roger does in Moonraker. And I don't know whether it's a direct reference or not, but I feel like Rian Johnson could do it. That would be a good way to do a sort of Bond reunion on the screen for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe not Laser Bee, but...
Wait till you see what's in my stockings. You like?
Most impressive.
Very good. Well, yeah, so Glass Onion and Knives Out Mystery is on Netflix now. Can heartily recommend watching it over the Christmas period. Do you guys want another Bond cracker joke?
Desperate for it.
This is Darren Lethley again. You'll probably know the answer to this one. Pull the cracker. Oh, you also got a Walther PPK in it. What was Sean Connery's favourite time of day to play racket sports?
Did you know this, BJ?
You must have heard this one.
No,
before.
I'm rubbish at cracker jokes. I can't link it together.
Well, we'll work out. What's a racket sport?
Tennis.
Right. Okay.
And then Howard Sean Connery.
Tennis. Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Yeah. See, I don't think along the lines of these puns.
I'll do a quick question here from.
What's that got to do with Christmas?
Well, it's just a crap joke, isn't it? In a cracker. Okay. We've got a question here from Neil Lee. He had a question for the Christmas episode. What is the one Bond movie that wasn't made that you would like to have seen? I would like to have seen Timothy Dalton in GoldenEye. Also, Sean Connery in Honor Majesty's Secret Service. I'll dive straight in with one, which I think would have been amazing, which is Quentin Tarantino's Casino Royale. The 1950s set Casino Royale, which he was wanting to make with Pierce Brosnan. I think that's the ultimate what if Bond movie.
Yeah, well, you know mine's going to go down that route. Mine would be, what if they kept him after Die Another Day?
Yeah.
That'd be mine.
So you're going with Pierce Brosnan in Casino Royale as well?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Did we say Sean Connery in Honor Majesty's Secret Service?
Well, yeah, that's what Neil said. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll have George Lazenby in Diamonds Are Forever.
Wow, really?
I've never thought about that before, but yeah, I'm taking that now. Yeah. I'd stick anyone in Diamonds Are Forever to make it more interesting.
Well, there we go. Let's move on quickly before we wrap things up, but just talk about quickly about the future of Bond. Have you seen I'll tell you the latest betting odds if you want to hear them.
Go on.
All right, so number 10. I'm just going to do it in countdown order. I'm not going to give the odds, but number 10, this is according to William Hill. Number 10, Michael Fassbender.
Too old.
Number 9, Dan Stevens.
No, it won't be him.
Number 8, Richard Madden.
Can't act.
Number 7, Douglas Booth.
Who's that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a friend of yours.
Douglas Booth. He was in Jupiter Ascending, was he? He's like a posh sort of English guy. No. Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I think he had his chance. I think he's too old, isn't he?
I think he is too old as well. James Norton.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be all right.
Reggie Jean Page.
No idea.
Bond for the Netflix generation.
Yeah, there we go. And here we go. Here we go. Top 3. Tom Hardy.
No, get lost.
Too old. Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Can't do a British accent or act.
Oh, I know he is. Silver. I actually don't mind him.
Despite being British, he can't do an accent.
But I think the way I'm seeing Bond going is I'd happy with anything. So just want
anything.
Some good action.
Anything.
He was all right in anything. Bullet Train, wasn't it?
He was.
Yeah, he's quite good in that.
But anything. So Timothy Chalamet, you'd take him.
I would actually, just to see it. Just to see it. I'd be bang up for that.
Tom Holland.
Oh, no.
No, I'm not even Tom Holland.
No.
Not for anything. Holland.
And then the number one, obviously, is Henry Cavill.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the door seems open now.
Might as well.
After Superman,
Yeah, he's got a bit of free time now.
Well, he's making the Warhammer movies now, isn't he? I'm sure he's not that busy. I'm sure he's quite busy.
Well, they're not going to make many more than one of those once they come out.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have a lot of spare time coming up soon. What was the one they did before? The World of Warcraft?
Yeah, Warcraft one.
It'd just be like The Witcher, won't it? Just another Witcher series.
I just think they need to crack on if they're giving it to him, because how old is he now? 37? 38?
It's got to be done soon, hasn't it?
It needs to, now or never, you know.
Come on, Chalamet. Got plenty of time.
Just to wrap things up.
Before you wrap up, I've got a little small quiz.
Oh, go on.
A little small quiz?
Small quiz. So, play your Bonds right, okay?
Oh my God, I like the sound of this.
And what's your best Brucey impression?
Good game. Good game.
That's not
nice
bad,
to see
that.
To see you. Nice.
That is very good. Who, higher or lower? Right, so... so to our American or non-UK listeners, we've probably just sounded like we've just had a meltdown there, but... Okay, play your cards right. I don't know what it's known as in the US. Probably similar, but they normally play it with cards, higher or lower, and you have to get through the deck. This I'm doing with Bond titles, running times, okay?
Okay.
So I've got 4 decks, right? But you just do 1 deck each and try and get through the 7 films, okay? So who wants to go first?
Butler can go.
Okay, what deck? 1, 2, 3, or 4?
1.
Deck 1, playing it safe. Okay. So first we have, turn it over, it's From Russia With Love.
Okay.
115 minutes. Okay, that's your first one.
Yeah.
Turn the next one over. Spectre.
Ah. Higher.
Higher. Okay. 148 minutes. Yes. Okay, yes. Here we go. Next one. Moonraker.
Lower.
Yes. Okay, right, 126 minutes, that one. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. The World Is Not Enough.
Higher.
128 minutes, only just by 2 minutes. Yes, well done. Okay. Next one, Octopussy.
Lower.
Oh, you loser.
It's 131 minutes, I'm afraid. Oh. You didn't get to the end. What a shame. It's usually a car, isn't it?
Like checkbook and pen.
Like a Fiat Punto. So, Wheatley.
Go on.
Choose a deck.
What have I got?
Two, three, or four?
Two.
Number two. Here we go. The first one is Honor Majesty's Secret Service. Mm-hmm. And the runtime is 140 minutes.
Yeah.
Next one is GoldenEye.
Oh, lower.
Lower. Correct. 130 minutes. Next, we have Casino Royale 2006.
Higher.
144 minutes, he's in there. Next one, Casino Royale 67.
That's a tough one. Lower.
131 minutes, yes, it is lower. And next we have Diamonds Are Forever.
Lower.
Oh, 115 minutes, yes, it is lower. He's got two more, he hasn't done it yet.
Oh, okay, okay.
But I think he might, because next is No Time to Die.
Ooh! Yeah, higher.
Yeah, 163 minutes, and then we have Live and Let Die.
Lower.
121 minutes. He's done it, you've won the car!
Well, we've both won a car.
I've been stitched up there.
Yeah, but he's got a Punto, you've got an Aston. So there you go.
Oh, mine was harder than his. Better Bond knowledge.
Well, I mean, wrap things up then with just a little quick game that I had prepared. You guys aware of ChatGPT?
No.
Right, it's an artificial intelligence bot that you can ask any question of, and it will give you an answer.
Go on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd go in and with some James Bond things, and I thought you might like to hear some of the answers. Mm. So I started off quite simple. Write me a James Bond movie title. Yeah. And here it came up with.
Oh yes, more than anything.
License to Kill, The Revenge of Dr. No.
That's fantastic.
That's basically, that's No Time to Die, isn't it?
which basically shows you the limitations of AI. But the next, so I thought, I've got to refine the question. I think it's in the question. So I said, what would be a good title for a new James Bond film? Do you want to hear what they come up with?
Yeah.
Double Agent 007.
Okay.
Bond versus Spectre.
Yeah.
Bond in Winter. Which is a weird one. Or I like this one. This is my favourite. Goldfinger 2, The Return of Auric.
Okay. Where's the quiz here? Where's the game?
There is no quiz. It was just a game. It's not really a game.
A game you had on your own with an AI?
It's a game I had on my own.
And you were just telling us about it.
Well, I just wanted to get your input on what you thought of this. But Brendan, this is one I put in for you. I asked it who should be the next James Bond. It wouldn't give me an answer. But I did ask what it would be like if Pierce Brosnan came back and made a fifth film. Do you want to hear about it?
Yes.
So, if it is possible that the film could be titled Brosnan's Last Stand or Bond One More Time, which I quite like.
Ooh, Bond One More Time.
To reflect the idea that this is Brosnan's final appearance as
Bond.
Daft
Punk soundtrack.
It could be called Bond One More Time to reflect the idea that this is Brosnan's final appearance as Bond. The plot could potentially involve Bond facing off against a powerful and dangerous villain. I mean, that's not very imaginative, is it? With a storyline that centres around a high-stakes race against time to prevent a global catastrophe. So that narrows it down.
I mean, to be fair, I think Purvis and Wade should be shaking in their boots with this AI.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now we've got
it
a Bond
like they
film.
Used it.
So this is our looking ahead to the Ghost of Christmas Future. So Bond One More Time. This is our Bond film that we're getting next. I asked Chat AI or Open AI to write as a theme song. Are you ready?
Yeah. You're going to sing?
So, verse one. No, I'm not. I might just add a computer voice, though.
Okay.
Verse one. I'm the man with the plan, the one they call Bond. 007, the code that I respond. With a license to kill and a heart of gold, I'm the one they turn to when the world is in a bind. So it hasn't quite got the rhyming there, but this is the chorus. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Bond, one last time. I'll take on the mission and I'll make it mine. Bond, one last time. I'll save the day and I'll make it shine.
Well, it's way better than Madonna's one.
Yeah. She should have used this.
At least it's about Bond.
Verse two. I face danger and intrigue on every continent, but no matter the odds, I always come out on top. It's a bit of a rough rhyme, that one.
Oh, but Shirley Bassey could squeeze that in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've got gadgets and guns and a charm that never fades, but most of all, I've got the will to win, no matter what it takes.
Yeah.
Then you've got the chorus again, and then you've got a bridge. And the bridge, I quite like this, is I'll go anywhere, do anything to protect my country and keep the peace. I'm the best of the best, and I always stand tall. When it comes to saving the world, I give it
my
all.
That's good, actually. That is very good. Does Bond normally sing his own song?
Yeah, he does. In this, he does.
What I would say, Tom, is if you want to sort of throw your ideas at us, you don't need to pretend you've
done this. Yes, here we go. I've spoken to an AI.
But this, I mean, it's called Chat GPT, and it's quite fun to have a play with. But I just thought you'd enjoy that. Mm-hmm. I did ask it to write some Christmas cracker jokes, but they were dreadful, absolutely dreadful. So I went on a different path. All right, well that's it then. So I hope you guys have had a good festive time, good festive period. Mm-hmm. It's been good to have you both back. You back weekly. Brendan's never left.
Yeah, don't I know it.
Merry Christmas.
After this festive special, the podcast will be taking a short break while we replenish our stocks for the new year, and then we'll be on the final stretch to get to the letter Z. So we've got some fun.
Get the AI to do the rest of them.
I might do a better job than you would. And to finally wrap things up, I've got a limerick here. Are you ready for this? It's quite saucy. So if your kids are listening, please switch it off now. But this is from someone on Twitter called Anyone But Grayling. And this is a limerick that he wrote for us. Are you ready?
Yeah.
There was an old man called Sir Roger who had an incredible todger. When he whipped it out, the ladies would shout, "He's pretty well hung for a codger."
That's nice. Nice. Classic.
Oh,
classic.
Dear.
Very festive.
I think you can get away with todger these days. It's getting
I think codger's more problematic.
Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah. You get todger in kids' books these days.
Well, on that note, I just want to say thank you, Mr. Wheatley, for joining us.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Brendan, as usual. And thank you to all our lovely listeners over the last year. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us. And thanks for all the support that you guys show. We love it. Keeps us going. And on that note, just remains for me to say that James Bond A to Z podcast will return soon.
Ciao.
The James Bond A to Z podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Butler and Brendan Duffy, with music by Tom Ingemels and artwork by Helene Dolly. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please like and subscribe and leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
You like?
Most impressive.
Bond. One last time. I'll take on the mission, and I'll make it mine. Bond. One last time. I'll save the day, and I'll make it shine.
In you come, Mr. Bond, in you come.
That's good. At least you woke the audience up. You're going to be Sean Connery, do you want to be Roger Moore?
Sean Connery.
Oh, another one. Good voice. I'll put that in the safe. Okay, here's your line, right.
Can I rely on a wake-up call for six?
That's excellent. That is excellent. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, I'll leave you to unpack.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there.
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.